handful of questions, but I don't think we'll have time for all of them. Given Trump's executive power and Republican control of the House, can we keep any of the new policies from happening?
From what I understand, I mean, there are some definite possibilities. There's that saying, I think, the first and better of the two Governor Cuomos in New York said that politicians campaign in poetry and govern in prose. I was thinking that that isn't quite right in this case. The president-elect campaigned in hateful doggerel, and I don't know how he's going to govern, but there is the sort of the reality principle. If he gets the pleasure at being destructive, he's still going to hit the reality principle. So it's already come up, as you may have heard, in terms of so-called Obamacare, where he thinks that he can cherry-pick certain things, like no discrimination for pre-existing conditions, which shows he doesn't understand the basic structure of Obamacare. But it's just to say that all is not lost, and a lot of the destructive, lunatic things that he says he wants to do, it'll be possible to stop some of it. How's that for an equivocal statement of hope?
What type of approach do you suggest for helping resolve the conflict in Syria so the people can establish a democracy to respect their human and civil rights?
Well, I wish I had that wisdom. You know, Reese Ehrlich is a great author, lives in Oakland, has written a book and reported from Syria. Now you might want to bring Reese Ehrlich in sometime. I was surprised in talking to a lot of peace activists that there has been a split in the peace movement in the United States about Syria. Some who say that the Assad regime should be defended, other than, say, the so-called moderate opposition, or I saw one phrase in the newspapers, the moderate extremists should be supported. And then there are others who say just stop shipping weapons in and don't take sides. I'm sort of in that third camp. But, you know, it's clearly diplomacy. You know, it's really notable that the U.S. government top officials keep saying there's no diplomatic... They keep saying there's no military solution, and they keep trying for a military solution, which tells you something.
I think this one's easy. What are the most credible news sources we can go to?
Well, you probably go to them a lot already. We all have our favorites. I think that, for instance, if one were to read the New York Times and listen to All Things Considered and spend an hour with Democracy Now! Every day and read Common Dreams thoroughly, you'd have a pretty good sense of a lot of what's going on. We have that opportunity. Not that any one source is the gospel, but I think it's important to keep an eye on the mainline media, including, you know, I think what basically, say, in foreign policy, do horrible reporting with some exceptions, All Things Considered and Morning Edition, just dreadful U.S. government line stuff. But it's important to listen to it, as well as getting the other sources. I sometimes compare it to, like, if you lived in a village and a bomber kept flying overhead, you might want to keep track of it. And the propaganda barrage that we're getting from a lot of the mainline outlets, we really need to monitor.
Can you say those three again?
Sorry?
Can you say three?
Oh, that I would suggest. Well, I mean, there would be others, but of course, you know, the New York Times, at least it's voluminous and has some information. CommonDreams.org, Democracy Now!, and All Things Considered. I mean, I think the ones that I would give more credence to, I mean, in terms of diversity of information, if you really burrow into Common Dreams, for instance, you will get a lot of information and analysis that you could listen to All Things Considered for a year and you'd never get it, and you'd rarely get it from the New York Times. Oh, well, yeah, now let me just talk about my organization. No, there's so many good groups, but briefly, and thank you for that, Carolyn. We've been at the Institute for Public Accuracy for 18 years. We put out 300 news releases a year, and you can go there at accuracy.org, and I think you'll get a lot of different perspectives on breaking news. So, and you can sign up for pretty much daily email alerts. Great progressive analysts and experts, Jackie Cabasso has been on releases, David Hartso and others. And so accuracy.org would be one place to go. In terms of action, before I forget, I'm very involved in rootsaction.org. We have 730,000 active members, most in the United States, about 600,000. We started at zero 6 years ago. And so if you're not already getting action alerts from rootsaction.org, I hope you will go and sign up. It's a good way for us to keep building a movement activity and be in touch for action.
Berkeley has been a sanctuary city. Thousands of students in the U.S. have parents who are undocumented. The reality that their parents may be deported is frightening them daily. Should we be working for more safe cities by expanding the sanctuary movement?
I think, you know, the question answers itself. I mean, that is so important and has been historically so important, where cities, counties, states have provided sanctuary, and it's going to be even more important now that the federal government is getting into such nefarious hands. I think it's crucial.
Since the origin of humanity, little boys grow up thinking they can prove their manhood by going to war, killing. Any ideas how to change this?
I think so many people in this room and in this country have been working on that. And, you know, I think there's so many different layers to it, including the cultural. And I think that's one of the more disappointing aspects of the election results, because some of the cultural underpinnings of, if you will, patriarchy and militarism are reaffirmed by the winners, at least not by popular vote, but the people who are, you know, Trump moving into the White House. It's reaffirming a lot of the militarism. And so I think the cultural work that we do has to be some of the layers. You know, the plays, the films, the radio work, the publications, the websites, the educators, the classrooms, all the creative cultural work that we do has to, is needed to dovetail with the most of our political work. Let me say, though, that there's a tremendous amount of work to do inside the Democratic Party as well. I was so thrilled. I mean, I enjoyed the Democratic National Convention for about 15 minutes. And it was the 15 minutes when we were chanting, "No More War," and upsetting, as you can see on the video, replayed on YouTube, Leon Panetta. He just wasn't expecting. It was like he thought he was in his living room with friends, and all these people were disrupting his warlike speech. And then General John Allen was prepared for us, but we're still chanting. So the tremendous militarism, I mean, let's face it, Hillary Clinton's a terrible, terrible militarist. And when I was debating with some supporters, I said, well, yeah, we'll have a woman president. And of course, they said, well, Margaret Thatcher was a woman too, as far as I know. So that's sort of an issue. But we have a lot of work to do in groups like Our Revolution, because, you know, Bernie wasn't really a pro-war candidate, but he wasn't an anti-war candidate either. And so it's really up for grabs as to whether the ethos of militarism is going to be undermined even inside the Democratic Party. I want to diverge briefly. This is such a nice segue. You're very invited to take this DVD for War Made Easy. If you don't have $5, you can take it for free, share it with people. There are two moments in here that I really, really, among my very favorite. One is with Barbara Lee on the floor of the House of Representatives a few days after 9/11. As we act, let us not be the evil that we deplore. And I think it's both inspiring and a reminder that even the best in Congress learn to mute their voices. Her voice was pretty muted in a lot of the last 7.5 years. And now it's going to be perhaps less muted with a Republican in the White House. But the fact is, we have undergone continuous, not only, and I'm being redundant here, continuous perpetual war, but militarism and build-ups, you know, and basically what C. Wright Mills called crackpot realism out of the Oval Office and the Obama administration. But Democrats have tended to mute their voices in Congress. It should just be unacceptable, and I think that this is a nonpartisan, not political electoral event, but hypothetically, if somebody lived in a country named the United States and they had a progressive district and there was somebody who wasn't measuring up, they might want to develop a serious candidacy for a primary challenge. The other thing I want to say is that Senator Wayne Morse is on this video. And here's a guy He's a Democrat. There's a Democrat in the White House. There are really wacko Republicans, not named Trump, but Goldwater at the time. There are all these reasons to just defer to the Democrat who's in the Oval Office. And Wayne Morris, as you surely know, refused to defer, not only by voting against the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, but as you'll see on this video, he went on national television and he just denounced the escalation of the Vietnam War, even though he was of the same political party as Lyndon Johnson doing the escalation. And to me, that's, you know, the glass is part full in terms of history and very empty in terms of now. There's not one U.S. senator who has behaved in the last 7.5 years the way that Wayne Morse did in challenging war. And that should be sobering to us.
It seems necessary to address the disaffection, alienation of people feeling cheated, left out of the promises of the American dream. Those who turned to Trump to feel valued, those who perhaps could have felt heard by Bernie and certainly did not feel included in the establishment-funded Hillary. How do we begin to build bridges with those?
Well, I think part of our challenge is really local. In a way, it sort of follows on what I was saying. When I was in Syracuse at a vigil, and it reminded me of what the Ecumenical Peace Institute has been doing for so long in downtown Oakland. There are activists with the Upstate Drone Action Coalition and others who once or twice a month for 5 years have been outside the gates of the Hancock Air Base, where the drone reapers are now being used to train pilots and sensor operators and so forth. And as I spoke with people there, I was trying to get the terminology right. I'm a priest, but I'm not active anymore. Does that mean you're retired? No. Are you inactive? Well, no, I'm real active. I'm an activist, you know. But he'd been a priest for a long time. And he said that a lot of clergy in Syracuse would go to, is it Fort Benning, where the School of the Americas was? And they would go and they would come back and they would denounce wonderfully the School of the Americas. And then the activists, including this priest, would go to the bishop and go to the ministers and say, we have a drone base 5 miles from Syracuse, within 5 miles from the city limits of Syracuse. We're organizing against it. Will you please give your voice to opposition? And the clergy, including the bishop, said, well, that's a very complicated issue. That's very complex. And it made me think of something Woody Guthrie said. He said, Woody Guthrie said, any damn fool can be complicated.
There's a lot of questions here, but I think we're going to end on this one. Would you recommend, please, a million people march peacefully in Washington to White House, Pentagon, to let Trump know, abolish war, a nonviolent approach, and not leave until he does it?
I'd recommend all sorts of nonviolent activity, you know, and as someone who's been a writer and speaker and written books, and also as an organizer, organizing is way more difficult, you know, compared to organizing, you know, writing columns and books is a piece of cake, you know, so it's sort of like, what's the saying, I don't know if I get this right, if wishes were wheels, then paupers would ride, you know, I mean, it's all in the doing, and I think that's why I believe that, you know, the activism is just going to be crucial. Also, there was a Chinese tactician who said long ago, when you are in a struggle with an adversary, don't do what you most want to do. Do what your adversary least wants you to do. And that's a puzzle that's hard to figure out sometimes, but it is a struggle about power. And we know when Frederick Douglass had said, you know, power never concedes without a struggle, it never did, it never will. The people who have grabbed control of the federal government, they want to retain that control. And we have this enormous challenge and opportunity in a multidimensional way, whether it's electoral work or the protests and the nonviolent direct action and filling the streets. Let a lot of flowers bloom because we're going to need them. And thanks again for being here.
Thank you very much. Okay.